Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 9th, 2021 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings such as this are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their packets available to them virtually. And for the public, these same meeting materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for this meeting today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Would the committee legislative assistant, Ms. Sunderland, please take the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang. Representative Joachim. Representative Joachim. And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Sunderland. Representative Jordan, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, February 4th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
I actually have not had a chance to review the minutes, sorry.
All right, Representative Wolgamott, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes?
Mr. Chair, as a matter of fact, I did review the minutes and I would like to move their approval.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Wolgamott motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes from Thursday, February 4th, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Members, today we're finishing the presentation from the administration on their Due North 2021 budget and plan. This is the department's comprehensive plan that centers the needs of our students as we focus on catching students up academically and also supporting their social and emotional needs. Then we'll hear from Paul Farron, the specialist at MDE on special education funding. I believe we left off on slide 41, but we'll leave it up to the department to pick up where they left off. Thank you for joining us again. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Deputy Commissioner Mueller, is this a handoff to you?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Dabney. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for allowing us to come and talk to you today. We're going to go ahead and resume our conversation that we were having with you last week. And so Megan is going to go ahead and pull it up for us. And so the place that we're going to start is talking just a little bit about also the leadership and the role of the Department of Education in the work that we have talked about thus far, as well as some of the additional work that we're going to be adding. One, as you know, we have talked about the fact that the Department of Education is building an equity, diversity, and inclusion center. That funding is actually coming out of the Department of Education's general fund. But the way that it works specifically with this, with the education plan, with the Due North education plan, is first and foremost to look at developing and providing anti-bias professional development for our schools and our staffs across the state in the forms of grants, as well as building trauma-informed grants so that we are continuing to support students' mental health and well-being as we are growing into our fall, going into 2022. And then also looking into what that's going to look like for thinking about anti-bias professional development in continuing to build our resources, our skills in supporting our students and our families. Also expanding language access for families. We recognize that one of the pieces we learned throughout this pandemic is our ability to communicate quickly in multiple languages is hindered by our lack of having the ability to be able to do that in the Department of Education. And so we really need to grow that opportunity. So this is one of the pieces we also want to be able to expand. Also modernizing our district data submission to support our students and educators and looking at how it is we get that information and how it's done in a timely manner so that the information that we do have is accurate. Also, looking at some of our legal costs as well as an operating adjustment. As you will see, when we're talking about the anti-bias, we can move forward, Megan, thank you. As we are looking at the anti-bias professional development, it is one-time funding. They are grants of up to approximately $50,000 for districts and charter schools to implement this professional development. This really could get to approximately 75 to 150 school districts, and the potential impact is, of course, of tens of thousands of students. And also the funding to be able to develop the best practices and then to provide that technical assistance. And so pulling together those resources, building the opportunity and the capabilities to be able to do that, bringing people in, whether that is hopefully someday physically, but also be able to do that virtually, and then developing a train the trainer model. We know that anytime that we develop professional development, a one and done is not an appropriate process for professional development. It is not a best practice. And so this really gives us the opportunity to build a cohort type model where we are providing that consistent professional development for the person who is in the trainer in the train the trainer format, but then also to continue to be able to provide some additional support and technical assistance, as not only in the anti-bias professional development, but also in our trauma-informed grants. And then also the expanding language access. One of the things that, again, we've recognized is to build a couple of things. One, at the Department of Education, our ability to be able to do this incredibly important work and to engage our public, and also to provide competitive grants to our districts and charter schools to also have translation services. We know that some of our larger districts have the capability of having either a translation service who they are contracted with, or they have people in-house who are able to do that work. We also know that we have districts across the state who do have a number of languages that are spoken in their school communities, but do not have the ability or the funding to be able to provide that type of support in translation services. And so we want to make sure that we are also providing that for our communities that need that. And then also looking at utilizing a Transact software, which gives us the opportunity to access common letters that are more like form letters that are used across the state that are being able to be developed in multiple languages, but you're able to put in additional information that is specific to your school district, and then some funding in the training contracts on how we're going to be able to help to support students and our staff in being able to, and families in being able to have the information that they need when they need it. And with that, I'm going to ask Denise, our CFO, to continue.
Good morning, Chair Daphne and members. For the record, my name is Denise Anderson, and I am the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Education.
Thank you for joining us, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you. The next proposal in this section is to implement and expand the data collection and integration system known as EDFI. EDFI technology was initiated to support the department's implementation of the 2016 All Kids Count Act. Requires the department to report graduation rates, results of Minnesota comprehensive assessments, and other items by detailed ethnicity for students of color and American Indian students. The implementation of EDFI thus far has been funded through a federal grant. There are currently 153 districts that are actively syncing to EDFI, with 40 planned to be on board this year. By the 2021 school year, all districts are planned to be utilizing EDFI. This proposal includes $6.6 million over the biennium to support, first of all, the IT services and infrastructure, and also the business intelligence tools that are used to make complex data more easily accessible and understandable which is a need we've been hearing from families, partners, and policymakers. This proposal also includes funding for resources to reach out to districts and work with them, provide them with the technical assistance and training, documentation to support them in their utilizing EdFi for their programs. Next slide, please. This next proposal is a two-part proposal. It is needed to fund the legal costs the department is facing. As you know, we are a defendant in several complex lawsuits that have the potential to establish landmark rulings in the state of Minnesota. The first part of this proposal is there was some funding that was appropriated for FY 2021, and because of the timing of these legal costs, they're uncertain and difficult to estimate. There's delays, there's mediation, things going on in the background, so we did not fully utilize the appropriation for 2021. So the first part of this proposal would be to cancel $2 million from the FY 2021 appropriation. The second part of the proposal then would be to allocate $4.5 million for the FY 2022-23 biennium. Those costs would be used to cover our legal costs at the Attorney General's office, costs related to discovery, mediation, and other court costs. Thank you, Megan. This next request in the proposal is for an operating adjustment. This one is also a two-part proposal. During FY21, we had some savings related to the state hiring freeze and some other operating efficiencies, not being in the building. We don't have building security, some decreased costs related to supplies and fuel. So the first part of this proposal would be to reduce our FY21 production, appropriation by $1.252 million. And then for FY22 and 23, then there would be an operating increase to cover the costs related to healthcare cost increases and other compensation related cost increases. The next slide is two different reduction proposals. The first one is related to the statewide assessment. We currently get $10.892 million per year. This proposal recommends reducing that by $2.4 million over the biennium. It would be a one-time reduction prior to the implementation of the MCA4 standards work that will need to happen starting in FY24. So that's why it's a one-time reduction. The work that the assessment team does can be shifted to federal funds during FY22-23, but then the state work would ramp up again starting in fiscal year 24. The second reduction proposal is to right-size the college entrance exam reimbursements. This program reimburses school districts and charter schools for the cost of one nationally recognized college entrance exam per student who wishes to take the exam. In previous years, this appropriation has not been fully utilized. The $500,000 a year reduction to that appropriation, the remaining funds would be enough to cover the reimbursement request based on the prior year's demands. So we wouldn't be, it wouldn't be impacting any of the reimbursement requests. And then the last slide then in this section, and I believe in our presentation, are some no-cost items. The first is a no-cost item to establish a library legislation advisory group to review, advise, and make recommendations for rewriting the library statutes. The library statutes have not been reviewed for many years and are outdated and not reflective of changes that are needed in the library field. It's a no-cost item as there would be no per diem or expense reimbursements provided. The second no-cost item is to grant MDE the authority to spend revenue generated by online learning application fees. It's already in law that that MDE collects these fees for the online learning applications. We collect about $2,500 a year for those fees, but we this proposal then would grant us the authority to actually spend those funds. The funds would be spent on things like research partnerships and stipends to outside experts to validate and support applications. The last no-cost item is to allow MDE to retain 0.5% of the state-approved alternate program allocation. Currently, school districts may retain up to 10% of their SAP funding for their administrative costs. What this proposal would do would be 9.5% would be retained by the districts, and the 0.5% then would be used by MDE to provide SAPs with some new program models and support SAP early to middle college programs. And with that, I believe we're at the end of our presentation and ready for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. And I see that Representative Kreisha has a question. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. As you mentioned, this, you didn't cover FTEs. You mentioned no cost. I just wanted some clarifying. Will this include new positions, and what would those FTE, what would that FTE number be?
Ms. Anderson?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Kreisha. Are you talking about the package as a whole or specifically to the no cost items?
Representative Kreisha.
Both preferably. What I'm looking for, as you went through this, you didn't cover the amount of positions that could be added or subtracted. And I just want to make sure I get a grasp of what that would be. So the answer is yes for both. If you can give me those numbers for the no cost and the total package.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you. So the no cost items do not include any new FTEs for the departments. The entire Due North Education Plan as presented includes 34 FTEs.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Representative Kreisha, follow up?
Yep, thank you. So just my last thought. So 34 new FTEs for the entire plan, and the no cost items then, just so I'm clear, those would be covered by existing staff?
Ms. Anderson?
The short answer is yes. It depends on which no-cost item you're talking about. So no-cost means that there would not be an FTE related to it.
Representative Kreisha.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So from one CFO to another CFO, I understand what you're saying, but whenever you're implementing new items, my experience is you just can't drop those on existing positions. There's training there. I mean, so I'm trying to get a grasp of, I understand conceptually, you've got these no-cost items, but they have to go somewhere, and they're, you know, we don't live in a zero-sum game. So do you anticipate that there will be training? Do you anticipate additional hours? Does that make sense to you? I mean, there is no zero-sum in the world of the CFO.
Ms. Anderson, is there cost in the zero-cost items, I think, is what Representative Kreisha is asking.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be difficult. There were other no-cost items that were presented last week, and so that's sort of my hesitation. And if he's talking about the specific ones that were presented today, it's my understanding that there are no FTEs attached to those requests.
Okay.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And I'm not trying to pin you down, but I want to make it clear. I mean, there is an accounting for this. There are areas where we're still going to have to account for how these items are going to be handled, and there could be fluctuations. Is that fair?
Ms. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Ms. Anderson. Who pays the fees for the online learning?
Ms. Anderson?
You know, I apologize. I'm not sure of that. That's something I'll have to get back to you on.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that will be helpful information. Would you also include any other program that includes fee payment so that we have a good idea of the number of fees that are paid to the department? So not just for online learning, but across the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other members with questions to the department's presentation from last Thursday or today? Representative Youakim.
Representative Youakim, you need to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Sorry, I had to plug in my headphones. More of a comment. I just wanted to thank MDE for one section that they added in expanding access to translation services. This is something that I heard from a lot of our community members all across the state during the spring and the summer when things were changing frequently, and having access to, you know, some districts just did not have the access to translate things for their communities like they needed to do to make sure parents were informed. So I just wanted to thank you for putting that in there.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Deputy Commissioner Mueller or Ms. Anderson, I'm not sure who'd be best for this, but could the department provide any clarity on when the unallocated ESSER II dollars, specifically the $9.5 million, I believe it is, that's outside the Title I formula allowance, will be distributed to districts?
This is Denise. I can answer that.
Ms. Anderson.
Right now, we are working through the LAC approval process for those funds. And in the meantime, we're also working to apply. There's portions of it that we still have to apply to the federal government for the non-public piece. And we're also encouraging people to focus on spending their round $1 first. Over the next few weeks, we should be getting more detailed information out there.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from members before we conclude this portion of the day's agenda with the department?
Chair Dabney?
Yeah, Ms. Anderson, yes.
Denise. I apologize. I need to make a correction to the record. There is Representative Crescia. There is one FTE that is tied to a no-cost item. I apologize for misspeaking earlier. I didn't have the details in front of me, but the state-approved alternative program, funding request, that is going to be utilizing 0.5% of the districts, the 10% that went to the districts. So that does include one new FTE. It's considered a no-cost item because the appropriation for that program does not need to be increased.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson, another line of questioning?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final question for Ms. Anderson. Will the department provide us with the data from districts as to how they used all the federal dollars that have flowed in during the pandemic, including the gears and the COVID funds, et cetera?
Ms. Anderson?
Chair Dabney, Representative Erickson, we are working on some different reports to be able to provide, and including a dashboard. So we will be getting that out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That'll be very helpful.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Ms. Anderson, will we have the same level of transparency over spending by the private schools that receive federal funds through the department?
Chair Dabney, I know the portion that will be spent. Yes, I believe there will be, because the schools, the portion that goes through the districts as a part of the equitable share, which is in the round one, the school districts will be able to report through UFARS that portion. And then the GEAR funding that goes directly to the non-publics in round two, we will have a some type of an application or a budget request. So we should have that information from them for that as well.
Thank you very much. With that, members, we'll conclude this.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ooney.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. Thank you for indulging me. My name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. While we had the committee here and we're on this topic, I just wanted to just answer a question, I believe, from Representative Erickson about the online learning application fee. That's $250, and that's paid by the applying district.
Representative Erickson, any follow-up on that?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Ooney, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ooney. With that, members, we'll conclude this portion of the agenda and thank the members of the department, the leadership for coming in Thursday and then finishing up today with a thorough overview of the Due North plan. Much appreciated. Ms. Burt, is Mr. Farron in the room?
Not quite yet.
Okay. Members, we've got a couple of minutes here while Mr. Farron, I believe, transitions from one meeting to this meeting. He is the Supervisor of Special Education Funding and Data with the Department of Education. So we'll pause for hopefully just a minute or two while he makes that transition. Thank you.
Thank you.
to the House K-12 Education Finance Committee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you would please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
I'm Paul Farron. I supervise the special education funding and data team with the Minnesota Department of Education.
Very good. Thank you. Please proceed.
I guess all that was really given for context on this was that a spreadsheet I had shared with Tim Strong almost a month ago to the day that was going to be the talking points, but I didn't get any, I didn't know if there was any specific questions or anything. I hadn't prepared a presentation for this, so I guess I was more of looking to, or figuring I was just fielding questions on the report itself or on the spreadsheet itself or just any general questions on the formula.
Would you be able, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, members, Paul Farron at the department has prepared two documents that might be quite helpful to the committee. The first of those is the statewide summary sheet that's in his presentation, and Ms. Burt, I think, can share that on the screen. This shows what's changed at the statewide level, and perhaps Mr. Farron would walk through these columns with us and rows and give the folks on the committee a general view of where the costs are at, where the state aid is at, and how that's changing from year to year.
Yep, that works for me, and this can, I can just move this.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. Thank you, Mr. Strom.
That works. Yeah, so with the screen up, I guess it's probably the easiest one to work with. I just went back to fiscal year 13 as a starting point, but for the most part, most of the discussion is fiscal year 19, which is final at the time of the November forecast. And with building the November forecast itself, usually what we are doing is for the school districts, which about half of them, actually about 63% of them, their UFARs, finance data, along with what they report in our other systems, et cetera, were within 2% of each other. We're using then the greater of the two in place for then their fiscal year 20 expenditures. For all the other ones where their data was not final and not within 2%, then it's just using the typical final fiscal year 19 and then forecasted forward to come with up with expenditures for fiscal year 20 and all later years. This is mostly done by calculating 4 or 5 year, depending on which time it is. Right now, it's been a 4 year for the November forecast, running average of where special education expenditures have grown between school districts, charters, and cooperatives. So each type is treated independently because we've seen over at least the last 4 or 5 years, expenditure growth has dramatically changed between the three entity types. And then on top of that, we also are using in the total adjusted aid and forecasted ADM for every one of the years for school districts that are growing, because generally as schools are growing, that also then is going to correlate to a larger special ed population. Larger special ed population generally means more costs. And so for forecasting out the individual districts, it's looking at either whether we had close enough to final 20 data to use during the November forecast. If not, it's their 19 projected forward at that average growth rate for districts, charters, cooperatives. And when I say cooperatives, I pretty much mean like all education districts, special ed cooperatives, the intermediates, any entity type other than a district or a charter school. So that's basically how the expenditure side of it gets forecasted out for every given year. Usually whenever we're talking in the long run discussing the cross subsidy, there's two versions of it. There's the version that's specific in statute that calls out just special education, which then since the ADSIS program and along with transportation for students that are placed in care and treatment, homeless and 504 plan kids, are also part of the special ed formula. We back out those expenditures and corresponding aids to come up with actual total state program special education costs and special ed transportation. So that's basically what the deducting the ADCESS piece is that's the cost of ADCESS growing at its usual rate, which has been just forecasted in of looking at what most recent prior years have been growth at, along with a pupil piece. Transportation costs is a separate forecast, which would take far longer just to go through. And then deducting out the transportation for the 728 kids for those non-public, or not non-public, for the homeless 504 kids, and then pulling in the federal cost. As you can see, the federal cost and federal aids are basically just a wash, money in, money out, as the funds make up just a small portion of the overall aid made available to school and their cost. And it's generally just assumed that, you know, we're not turning money back for the most part to the federal government with unspent federal special education funds. And while some districts use prior money for part of this and push some of it forward, in the long run, if they're spending it all, whatever's coming in is going back out. And then going down, and then this kind of just shows where the growth has been in recent years. Fiscal year 15 and 16 were our highest increase years, as that was the starting of the base and schools were basically encouraged of, since we're setting a hold harmless to this year, if you were ever looking to build or add new programs, 15 and 16 were kind of the years to do that. And then we've kind of, you know, leveled off a little better from that point forward, at least as the districts weren't expanding as much. That also then kind of correlates as we're going out into some of the future years, due to the fact that districts have kind of now hit a capacity limit and are nearing that point of adding more costs. And as the growth cap kind of has now been eliminated for fiscal year 21 and later, adds to the reason why the cost at district side should start increasing as we go forward. The special ed aid then is just running through a makeshift formula itself. You know, for districts using the lesser of the three options for initial aid, greater of the two for excess cost, pulling in estimated hold harmlesses, caps, and growth limits for fiscal year 21 and older. Growth limit again, or 20 and older, the growth limit has been removed for fiscal year 21 and later. It also then is calculating the aid attributed to the ADCESS program and deducting it along with the aid attributed to the non-special ed transportation costs. Furthermore, it's pulling in the MA revenue that the school are generating for third party. These are federal funds that are paid through the Department of Human Services. They come to the district as like their state funds. And then also the federal aid, which is just a wash. After that, we just kind of end up getting our, you know, again, change in aid for each of the years going forward. And then, which obviously is in 22, we do see a lower change in aid as expected because fiscal year 21 having less of a growth in costs. And since costs are a year behind for where aid is based off of, we end up just seeing that year lag when it comes to the aid side of the calculation. Cross subsidy, then we have gross, which is generally just total costs minus total special education aid. And then last up is that general education to defray. These are for students who spend 60% or more of their time outside of general education and are pretty much solely in special education programs. And so we're calculating the amount of general education revenue that the students are earning solely while in the general education programs that would otherwise be used for general education instruction, as that revenue can be used to defray the cost of special ed. Once we deduct that off, we get to our net cross subsidy, which is basically the unreimbursed cost to the school districts. I've added in the adjusted ADM to come out, which is total ADMs across the state, to get our cross subsidy per ADM statewide. And then at the just very bottom, adding in the federal, the shortfall amount. So if the feds were to fully fund their 40%, this is the additional amount of federal revenue that we would need on top of the federal revenue that's already reported up on the higher rows. And then how much would still be the state's portion of the cross subsidy if, you know, we received that additional amount in federal funding.
Thank you, Mr. Farron, for walking through that detailed spreadsheet. Representative Drazkowski, you have a question for Mr. Farron?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Farron. Being new to the Education Committee, I'm learning a lot here. One of the things I've heard most from my administrators in schools is the frustration with the cost drivers around special education. Does maybe between Mr. Farron, Mr. Chair, and anyone else, what is the amount of additional liabilities that that state taxpayers have to schools because of the additional special ed requirements that we have in Minnesota above and beyond what the federal mandates are? Is that the bottom line, Mr. Farron, that you went through on your spreadsheet?
There's never been a full comprehensive study to look at all the individual items. I know there was the 2013 Office of Legislative Audit Report that laid out, I think, around 200 items where Minnesota law exceeded federal requirements. There really is no way to identify the individual cost of every one of those additional items to then say how much schools are paying above and beyond, which then to correlate out as to how much is going into state special education aid that's costing schools. Usually it's, you know, we just see it as, you know, schools are no matter what going to need teachers, paraprofessionals, mental health service providers, OTs, PTs, and speech therapists, likewise. To identify out which of those would be able to be eliminated just because we, you know, reduced some of the level of requirements in Minnesota so that we more match the federal, really wouldn't be able to be something we could calculate.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Drazkowski, you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we in
now? We can hear you now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Farron, how, if we were to discover what that amount is, I'm seeing here a 50% increase in costs in 7 years, which is an amazing acceleration in growth. And that's just the 7 years that are current compared to the 2013 numbers. You don't have the chart in front of us now. In looking ahead, I didn't run those percentages, but they look to, as I think you pointed out, it looks to be even steeper. So how do we discover what those are, Mr. Chair, Mr. Farron? This is significant. This is a significant expenditure because we're not in conformity with the federal approach.
Mr. Farron?
For something like that, I think it would take staff, you know, more of school districts themselves, people from the program sides, to be able to remotely get into that area to identify staff who are solely there because of you know, the additional requirements that Minnesota law would have, and it almost have to be on entirely a LEA by LEA basis with them identifying to be able to, and who could be eliminated. Cost that would be reduced solely if those requirements weren't in place.
Representative Drazkowski, just a language question there. You said that we were not, now I've lost the terminology, aligned with federal requirements. I think your issue is we are and then we exceed, not that we are not. Am I understanding you correctly?
Well, yeah, I use the word conformity, Mr. Chair. We're not aligned with, you know, we're either in Minnesota, we have even more regulations and more requirements, and each of them carries a lot of extra expense, of which it appears now, Mr. Chair, we don't even know how much additional expense is being placed on our school districts because of the fact that we have all these additional requirements that we've written into law over time, many of them probably before me and before you, Mr. Chair. But it's amazing. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here, and we don't even know how much it's costing us because of these additional requirements that we place on school districts. So, Mr. Chair, I'd have one last question. Maybe it's for Mr. Strom.
Representative Drazkowski, let me just stop you just to clarify. Your contention isn't that we're not in conformity with federal law. It's that we exceed conformity. I just wouldn't want someone watching to get the incorrect impression that we're not in conformity with federal law.
Okay.
We are, but then exceed. Is that?
I follow you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, different idea of what conformity is. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Understand we way exceed the federal requirements here in Minnesota, and it's very costly, and our school districts are telling us about this, and I don't know that we as a legislature have been receptive to what they are saying. So my question, Mr. Chair, would be maybe to Mr. Strom, how many states align about, I don't know if conformity is the right word, how many states align fairly accurately with the federal requirements, and how many states, sorry, Mr. Chair, and how many states, conform pretty close to federal guidelines, and how many states exceed them?
Mr. Strom, are you the best person to answer that question for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, that's an interesting question. I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that. Let me check some sources and I'll get back to you with an email to see whether we can, whether NCSL or ECS or one of the other groups that does 50 state comparisons as a helpful table for us. One thing I would add is that a lot of the differences between state and federal law are hard to identify because the system is built up regarding litigation and other matters in Minnesota around the combination of the two. And simply to say the state were to, if the state were to conform, would require essentially, if the state said we're just using the federal standards, would require the state to basically have a variety of those issues redetermined, relitigated, to determine what services are actually necessary. There are some areas where Minnesota has made a choice, and perhaps Mr. Perrin would like to speak to a few of these, including the 0-3 service and some other children 0-3 years of age and other areas where like that, where there may be some ways to identify, but there would still be state obligations under Child Find and other things there. But those are certainly some of the areas where our system is more robust than other states. A couple of years ago, there was an effort by a number of school officials to deal with some of the process-related questions where they thought essentially Minnesota could simplify its process to more tightly conform to federal law. And there were a number of those provisions that were discussed 2 years ago by the legislature. It's not clear to me what the overall cost savings related to those are. But certainly we could pull up that list and perhaps Chair Youakim could talk about a few of those provisions that were adopted 2 years ago as a way of trying to implement those district suggested changes. But in terms of your general question, let me get back to you after checking some sources to see if we can find more comprehensive numbers on state-by-state basis.
Mr. Farron, do you have anything to add to that?
Regarding Minnesota being a birth mandated state, for part of the state's maintenance of financial support application for getting our state's federal funds every year, I have to calculate the amount of state special education aid that is attributed to the birth to two students, which is generally somewhere around $14.3 million. In program aid a year is going there. And then we have the home-based travel provision, which is around then $270,000 a year in home-based travel aid, paying for teacher staff to go to families' homes. And so it's just covering the transportation costs. So a little over, you know, $14.6 million are right in that area every year is about what that is for the birth to two piece of.
And Mr. Farron, just to put a, clarify a little bit further, that is an area where we exceed the federal requirements.
Yes,
and the cost of that greater level of service.
Right. Yes. You don't have to. Federal law starts at usually the 3 to 21, and Minnesota being birth mandate, then we're providing the services to birth to two.
Thank you very much, Representative Drazkowski. There's $14.7 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will. It sounds like it's more than that, but I will follow up with Mr. Strom and others. It sounds like it's probably hundreds of millions, but I know that this is something that is very important to our school districts. I hear it over and over again, their frustrations with the inability to control that area of cost. We placed more and more mandates on local school districts, and what we get in return is what appears to be hundreds of millions of dollars of additional spending that we don't even know what the amount is or what it may be attributable to, as the House Education Finance Committee trying to make plans. I think we need to have a better idea of what these cross drivers are and why we are where we are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Farron, for your overview. One of the things that we discussed in education policy last year was the New Ulm Project. It was a big push from Senator Pratt and different representatives in the House to look at some of those policy issues that have been put in place, mostly around paperwork that could be maybe tightened up. One of the things you have to remember about where Minnesota exceeds, a lot of it is driven by parents and students, as it should be, that want to make sure their students are being serviced. So if you look at the OLA report, Representative Drazkowski, I'd also highly recommend that you meet with PACER and some of the parents that have helped put those things in place. A lot of it is just policy around how parents have the ability to change IEPs and make sure their kids are getting the services that they need. And the birth to three program, while it may cost some money, it saves us in the long run quite a bit more, especially if you work with kiddos birth to three that are on the autism spectrum and being able to get them ready to participate fully in school. So it really is an amazing, and I hate to put price tags on kids, but it is a big bang for the buck. And that's what we have to remember too, is when we look at these numbers, there's stories and children behind them and families and students that deserve to have an education as well. One of the biggest frustrations when I started advocacy work that I heard from districts was the fact that the federal government had put requirements in place, rightfully so, to make sure all our students are educated, but had promised 40% of the cost to be paid. Over the years since the IDEA Act, they have never given us more than 17%. So that leaves a hole, clearly. And that's what you're seeing. And this spreadsheet is that hole, and that's the cost subsidy. And I just want to make sure that I am reading the spreadsheet right, because even though I've been in education finance for 2 years now, sometimes the spreadsheets get a little complicated. But bottom line of what I'm seeing is the sped costs are going up, and I did not see reflected on the spreadsheet, correct me if I'm wrong, the amount of numbers of students that are now also being provided for sped to account for some of that increased costs. And that aid has not increased except for what we finally put in place last year to try to hold some of that cross subsidy harmless. And that the cross subsidy roughly per student that you have on the one line for the ADM says $955. My question is that for every student, or is that the cross subsidy just for the SPED students? And then when you have the line on the feds falling short to the tune of about $720.74 million, that's because they haven't lived up to their 40%. Is that accurate? And then the final question would, the state portion falling short, that $119.48 million, maybe tell me a little bit more about that. Thank you.
Mr. Farron, there was a series of questions for you.
Yes. Yes. All right. And they're at least in order on the spreadsheet, just in the right hand. So I just got to work my way down. Yes, the 955 for fiscal year 25 as the cross subsidy per ADM is the net cross subsidy for that year divided by the total adjusted projected ADM for that year. So gen ed, special ed, that's all students. So basically the first $955 that every kid would earn is going to fund the unreimbursed cost of special education. The $720 million for the federal shortfall is how much additional the feds would have to kick in on top of the, you know, estimated $191 million that they would be kicking in to cover their share of the 40%. And then the $119 million for fiscal year 25 for the state portion is that is how much the state would also have to kick in for it to fully cover, say, the 60% side of it for their side of the provision, you know, if the feds were to kick in the $720 million to then fully fund special education in fiscal year 25.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Farron. That's the one thing I have learned about spreadsheets is never to make assumptions and always to ask questions. And I really appreciate that. Just want to say that I am really proud of what Minnesota has always tried to do about meeting students where they're at. And some kids just cost a little bit more to educate than others. What we have to make sure, though, is that we put that pressure where pressure is due to on the federal government to make sure that they're living up to their promise to us and to our students. And that we do what we can to work with our school districts to make sure that they have the tools that they need. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Mr. Farron, my understanding is that some of the services that children on IEPs receive in schools are or may receive are actually in a screening for their qualification for services are actually medical services, not academic educational services. And am I right that Minnesota allows some of those things, say, to be billed to third parties, including MA, and some of those medical services, say, mental health screening, we don't allow school districts to bill to third-party medical providers? Mr. Farron?
Yes, Representative Daphne. So Minnesota, for schools and for students who have an IEP in place, they are allowed to use that the IEP and the services required in there that are also medical type services, physical therapy, occupational therapy. PCA ends up being the bulk of most of it, I believe, over 50%. And so that service being in the IEP, if a student is on MA or family is, they are able to bill those services to the medical assistance fund and get 50% back on their average spend to provide that service. Mental health, which deals usually with the social worker school psych services. In the state of Minnesota, currently schools besides the IEP have to also go through having a diagnostic assessment, which is quite similar in my understanding to the IEP process and therefore is very costly to be able to do. The schools also need to have staff who are specifically CTSS certified on top of their usually social work or mental health qualified professional licenses, which just makes then very few numbers of schools in the state are actually, you know, go through the diagnostic assessment for each individual kid and then have the staff to be able to do that. There is a few that I believe in North Central Minnesota that were contracting with private, you know, companies up there for them doing those services. But I think even some of those are starting to fall back off as the mental health piece and what Minnesota's billing is usually less than $1.5 million a year in total revenue compared to, I think we've taken around $54 million in total for the third party billing revenue.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. Representative Kreischer, you have a question.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a comment to this. This is a good line of conversation. And, you know, this problem is not new. I remember back working with then Representative Paul Thiessen as we tried to put a matrix together to understand this level and what we're doing. And through that, you know, as a finance committee, we have to look at the costs, and I know we're trying to get our arms around that. We also find out we're overextended in areas, and there's areas that we exceed where the federal government has asked on special ed, and of course that creates a cross subsidy. But I think the thing that I want to bring to this conversation is, in all of that, if we don't find a way to get our arms around this, the reality of this is not necessarily the ones and zeros that get moved around in the spreadsheets. It's the lack of IEP proficiency and excellency that we're getting to our students. And what we're running into, what I hear all the time, that translates into cost, but is more along the lines of special ed teachers who were designed to help their students with their individual needs and were trained in that, are now doing more paperwork and bureaucracy and legal work. And that really does need to be addressed, because at the end of the day, we can look at the costs and we can, you know, Representative Drazkowski's points are in order. You know, this is a drain on the taxpayers. This is a drain on the levies. But more importantly, it's also a drain on the needs that are not being met. And if we continue to fund, or if we continue to mandate very high cost items that only affect a small amount of people, but in a large scheme of things, we're drawing from the larger population. Those are all real problems. And I just, I want to bring this conversation to that, to where the rubber really meets the road. And that is, if we don't get our arms around this in a finance committee, and we've kicked this down the road every, it's hard, I get that. And Mr. Chair, no deference to you, when we were, when Chair Loon was in your position, we were still trying to figure this out. This is really, really challenging. But I don't want this to be about MDE not getting it, or, you know, who's doing what, who's not, because the reality is this is becoming the tsunami that will be something that we can't solve. And if we don't get our arms around it. And so I just want to bring this back to at least the perspective that I see, which is we have kids whose needs aren't being met because this is so overwhelming. And we have teachers that can't directly work with their kids because this is overwhelming. And we need to figure that out, or we need to find a way to consolidate this to a problem where we're not eating the entire elephant, but we're taking one bite at a time so we can and reduce the problem, to use a really bad analogy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kreisha, or Representative Kreisha. Mr. Strom, I think you'd indicated there were two spreadsheets.
Mr. Chair, members, in addition to the fine work Mr. Farron puts together at the state level, the second sheet in his spreadsheet is a district by district analysis of the fiscal year 21 funding by school district, so that members of the committee can get familiar with the various components of special education funding. And perhaps Mr. Farron could walk through that spreadsheet. It's set up as most of our spreadsheets are, with strata at the top and then followed by the individual district data. Members have those in their packets, but perhaps Mr. Farron could walk through the columns on this spreadsheet, explain briefly what each of those parts of the special education revenue are as you walk across the top to that total in the very right-hand column, the total special education aid.
Mr. Farron?
Yep. Yeah, so starting out with regular aid, this used to always just be referred to as the initial aid calculation. There's a beginning in with fiscal year 16 and continuing on to even our current, there are three provisions of the initial aid, or well, regular aid calculation. One that looks at the old formula eligible costs, so strictly teachers, paras, you know, OT, PT, psychs, staff who are providing direct services to kids, and this is just their salary piece of it. Also, whether, you know, contracted service providers, again, working directly with kids, and then supplies and equipment used by kids. That's part of option one. Option two brings in all of the costs that, sorry, still on the regular aid one, as there's three options to it. Option two brings in all of the costs that were not eligible prior to 2016. Mostly this is benefits. However, there are some non-direct instruction providing staff, think of like your special education directors, assistant directors, due process clerks, paperwork people, and then some, you know, laptop supplies used by the special education teacher specifically to them. So it brings in then that as part of option two. So just total program cost, and then option three in there is the census-based portion of the calculation, which tries to get Minnesota to be more similar to, I think, the majority of states in the U.S. that are funding special education more strictly just based off of disabilities and paying so much money per dollar per disability. Schools get the lesser of the three options. And then on top of that, this is also where transportation is pulled in, being 100% funded based on their prior year costs, both for special education transportation and for that the homeless care and treatment students on 504 plans. That's why it ends up being the bulk of the aid piece itself. Next up is the excess cost calculation. There's two options or two separate calculations in here. Schools now get the greater of the two calculations. One that's looking at kind of the difference in their old formula costs, and one that's looking at their total, you know, total program costs, and which then just uses a different portion of general education revenue to offset. Schools who have larger special education programs comparative to their general education size undoubtedly will get more in excess cost aid because they have less general education students to spread the unreimbursed cost of special ed out, and therefore we're giving them more in aid. Next would then, I guess, in order of this, is the cross-subsidy aid reduction that was added in fiscal year 20. Not to be mistaken with the cross-subsidy aid formula that we had from 2014-2015. This one is new. It solely just looks at a makeshift, like, bird's eye view of the cross-subsidy for the prior year. So for this being the, this estimate for the fiscal year 21 school year is looking at fiscal year 20 costs. It'd be looking at just school districts, so the 330 school districts, their total program transportation, everything cost from the prior year, so fiscal year 20, minus their overall aid in special education, and then minus that general education to defray component for each school district, and leaving them with a generalized cross subsidy. The big difference between this cross subsidy and the one that's always reported annually in a report is cross subsidy here is everything that goes into the special education formula, whereas generally cross subsidy of special education backs out those non-special ed costs, access, the transportation for non-special ed kids. This also only applies to school districts. And for fiscal year 21 is once we calculate that unreimbursed amount, it's school districts get 6.43% of that dollar amount to help cover their cross subsidy. It was 2.6% in fiscal year 20, 6.43 in 21, and based on current law holds at the 6.43. Next column is the growth cap. That was eliminated in fiscal year 21. I can hear the number of school districts that are rejoicing just from this alone. So basically, once we received the new funding formula in 2016, before there was a, you know, statewide appropriation that set a cap on the actual aid calculated, whereas once we got 2016, there was individualized district caps that limited their growth ability, which definitely put a hamper on some school districts who would get high cost kids coming in, or who are trying to expand their own programming, or a fear of just we're getting more open enrollment coming in and we're needing to add to our program and we're hitting up with the cap. So huge, you know, kudos for that, at least being gone for fiscal years 21 and later. The next column is the hold harmless. It's looking at our fiscal year 16, what the average age aid paid in 16 was, adjusting it to current year dollars, in this case, fiscal year 21, by setting a set inflationary factor of roughly 4.6%. And then it looks at adjusted ADMs. Was the district growing? Were they declining? As to how it adjusts the first level of the hold harmless. And then recently added in fiscal year 20 was a secondary piece to the hold harmless, which looks at how much our schools spending in the current year and their tuition adjustment, because we did have a handful, less than six schools, where their 16, they set a really good hold harmless, and since then have slowly just had their costs remain flat or been slightly declining. Their tuition bills have been getting out of hand, and they're really incentivized to never increase their costs because their aid under the old hold harmless was growing at roughly still 4.5%, and yet their costs were decreasing, and overall they were actually, you know, being funded at, you know, 80 to 90%. And so this kind of, the secondary hold harmless cap put a limit on that. But so this is to help out those school districts where their, you know, tuition bills have gotten to be significantly more, or, you know, 16 was just a low year for them. The next is the tuition adjustment column. Minnesota MDE basically does the tuition adjustment for any time a student is served not by their resident district through either open enrollment, placement, care and treatment programs. This is just the huge adjustment for once we calculate a school's unreimbursed cost, create rates by disabilities or by sites, and do a huge shuffling of around $255 million across the state. The big thing with this is it's not only in some cases moving special education unreimbursed costs, students who are placed, it also has to calculate the general education revenue and is also applying it to the tuition bill. And then the next column is the charter adjustment. Beginning with fiscal year 20, the provision for students who are opened enrolled. Before that, starting in fiscal year 15, we went to open enrollment. Tuition adjustments were only 90% of the unreimbursed amount. And then beginning in fiscal year 20, that dropped to 85%. And now in 21, it sits at 80% and is at 80% going forward. And now this aid for charter schools specifically is to cover that unreimbursed 5% amount from fiscal year 20, and now is 10% for fiscal year 21. So it's basically just the aid attributed to them only tuition billing 80% of their unreimbursed cost for the open enrolled kids, compared to, you know, this giving them so they're back up to 90%. Adding up all the columns together is where we get to the total special ed aid. And I should make a note, the $1,758,000,000 number total there is slightly different than the number on the previous spreadsheet for fiscal year 21, because the aid on there is also this number, plus there's a separate appropriation for the special pupil students, wards of the state, and also for the home-based travel, which that total number included, which is not part of this, as this is the separate appropriation just for the main special education formula.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. Questions from members? Lot to take in there. Members, tomorrow we have Mr. Farron. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for taking the time with us and walking us through those spreadsheets. Mr. Strom, thank you as well. I imagine there's a lot to digest there still, so there may be future questions. Thank you both. Members, tomorrow we have, I believe it's two bills on the agenda, and I will look forward to seeing you here again at that time. With that, members, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.